tuned in to the Community Cats Podcast. Ready? Let's go. Hey there, cat lovers. This is Kristen. I'm the technical tabby here at the Community Cats Podcast. And I want to just pop in real quick to let you know that today's episode intro is a little different because today's episode is a little different. Today, we're bringing you part one of a live recorded webinar titled From the Backyard to the Front Page, Building a TNR Movement. In this session, Brian Cordes, who's the National Programs Director for Neighborhood Cats, takes us back to where it all began with a handful of kittens in a Manhattan lot. And he shows us how one moment sparked a grassroots movement that helped transform New York City's approach to community cats. You'll hear how what they learned in the early days of Neighborhood Cats shaped big picture strategies like targeting, tracking, and community involvement, and why starting small was really the key to going real big. It's part history lesson, part how-to, and it's all about the power of smart, focused TNR. So settle in and enjoy this behind-the-scenes look at how a movement gets built, one colony at a time. And as your regular host and head cat here at the Community Cats Podcast, Stacey LeBaron always likes to say, thank you for joining us, thank you for listening, and thank you for turning your passion for cats into action. Enjoy part one of From the Backyard to the Front Page, Building a TNR Movement.
I first want to introduce Susie Richmond. She is the person in the background answering all the questions. She is the executive director of Neighborhood Cats, having served in that role since 2010. She oversees hands-on TNR programs in New York City, Jersey City, and on the island of Maui, as well as using her prior Madison Avenue advertising experience to write, among other things, crowdfunding appeals to help the many sick and injured cats who come Neighborhood Cats' way. If you're not subscribed to their e-news, definitely do that because I love seeing those stories come in. One of her favorite projects currently is a veterinary scholarship program designed to train community cat-oriented vets on high-volume spay-neuter techniques. When she's not in the office, you can find Susie out in the fields of Maui, where she recently passed the 1,000th cat trapped mark, which is amazing. Congratulations to Susie. And the voice you're going to be hearing is Brian Cordes. He serves as Neighborhood Cats National Programs Director and Susie Richmond's husband. Back in 1999, while working in Manhattan as both an attorney and a video editor, Brian co-founded Neighborhood Cats after TNRing a colony near where he lived. Except for a six-year stint as the grants manager at PetSmart Charities, he has been with the organization ever since. He has authored or co-authored handbooks on grassroots TNR, community TNR, and return-to-field programs. You can always find him online where he is regularly presenting both basic and advanced webinars on all things trap, neuter, return in partnership with the Community Cats. And we are incredibly lucky to have him. And Brian, with that, I will turn this webinar on over to you.
Thank you, Kristen. Welcome, everybody, and thank you for taking time out today. Going to cover a lot of ground. Make sure you download the handouts because one of them is the slides of all of that you're going to see today. So you don't have to be madly scrambling to take notes. Just download the handout. You also find the Neighborhood Cats Handbook, which is meant for you as a reference material. If there's anything hands-on that you want to dive into in more depth, that's where you go. So we're talking about building a TNR movement and community-wide program in general. And I thought that the best way to do this would be to talk about our experience because every situation is going to be different. And depending on, are you in an urban area, suburban, rural, what kind of resources are available to you? So I thought that probably everybody could gain something and you're not going to be able to exactly replicate what we did, but you could pull a lot out. And in the course of describing our history at Neighborhood Cats, we'll stop and we'll pull out some of the concepts that are really general that pretty much everybody can apply. So we started in 1999, and there were just three of us, and I'm sure a lot of you starting out are in similar situations where it's a few volunteers, and we all lived on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. We were not a nonprofit or anything like that, so the initial work we did was all self-funded. And at that time, there were no organized spay-neuter programs for feral cats in New York City, and the euthanasia rate at city shelters was extremely high. So today, we've made quite a bit of progress from way back then. And I think this chart goes a long way towards showing that. So back in the year 2000, the city shelter was taking in almost 30,000 cats a year and euthanizing almost 20,000 of them. So like about a 67% euthanasia rate. Now, fast forward 25 years, and it's quite a big improvement. We're about 9,000 cats coming in. So intake's dropped by almost 70%. And euthanasia is way down to, I think it's 600 to 700 last year. So that's a drop of close to 96%. So neighborhood cats and the advent of trap neuter return were certainly not the only factor in this. There was a big drive for more spay neuter in general, driven largely by the ASPCA. There was a Maddie's Fund program to strengthen the rescue community and pull cats from the city shelter. And the city shelter got to be better funded and have more resources. But certainly it was one of the factors that helped drive this change. And of course, challenges remain. But I think it's really important to recognize and celebrate the progress that has been made over time and can be made in your community. Do note that it's not an overnight fix. You may see, hopefully, some dramatic improvements quickly and early on, but community-wide trap neuter return is a long-term program and something that you persist with. So let's talk about the very first cats that I TNR'd and my two co-volunteers at the time. And it's kind of a funny story because I was not involved in animal rescue other than to occasionally kind of use my status as an attorney to help a couple of rescuers I knew to get cats out of bad situations. So they'd say that there's a cat who's being treated poorly in the basement of this bodega, and I'd put on my suit and march in and talk to the owners about the health code and get them to hand the cats over. So that was pretty much my entire involvement. And then one fateful day, I was walking past an empty lot near about a block away from where I live, just an unusual empty grassy lot in the middle of the Upper West Side. And I saw a little kitten running around in the grass on the other side of the iron fence. And I immediately thought, oh, I can handle this, right? I got friends who are rescuers. I'll get a hold of this kitten and I'll pass it along to them. And then about a minute later, I saw two more like 6, 7, 8 week old kittens playing. And I thought to myself, well, this is going to be a little harder than I thought, but still manageable. I can still do this. And then two more kittens came along and there were five of them running around in the grass. And honest to God, at that moment, I thought, I'm in such deep trouble here. And I had the sensation that my life was about to change. And lo and behold, here we are 25 years later. It turned out there were over 30 cats and kittens living in the interior courtyards of this block. And along with myself, there were two other neighbors who had spotted the cats and started looking into the situation and trying to figure out ways that we could help. And at that time, I like to say I did what any responsible citizen would do, which is I tried to find somebody else to take care of the problem for me. And I called the shelters and the various rescue agencies, and they were all overwhelmed. And none of them had services for feral cats. And Nitra Fraser, who is the author of the book, The Natural Cat, she started the holistic raw food movement in cat care. She suggested we do trap neuter return, which I'd never heard of before. And I was skeptical that would be something that would work in a densely urban environment like Manhattan. But we didn't have any alternatives, so we decided to give it a try. And my coworkers and I, we found each other in the course of poking around the block. And we developed relationships with the different store owners and the superintendents of the building and the doormen and various residents in the area. And in order to get the cats fixed, we had to find veterinarians to do this. At that time, what we did was we would find veterinarians who, anywhere in New York City, who had just opened their offices and they needed the cash flow. So they would give us a very good deal on the costs of spay and neuter. And we would trap one or two cats at a time and bring them in. And then, of course, go and release them back. So we were very diligent and focused on this one colony of cats. That's what we were interested in, helping these cats. We had no idea of anything larger or a new nonprofit or anything like that. We just wanted to get this situation under control. So the goal was to get these cats 100% spayed and neutered. And when I look back at what happened, it's clear that without knowing it, what we did was we established a model colony. And this is the first tip for you guys, which is you want to work on a scale where you can do the best you possibly can. So we weren't thinking about the city. We weren't even thinking about across the street. We were just wanting to do this one colony as best as we possibly could. And that's what your resources allow, including your time, your funds, your coworkers, then that's what you do. So in establishing this model colony without knowing we were doing it, we did eventually get all of the cats fixed. There was one kitty who took a few years actually to catch, and she had a couple of litters of kittens in the meantime, but pretty quickly we were up to close to 100%. Well, I shouldn't say very quickly, because since we were going one or two cats at a time, it actually took about 8 months. And any kittens and friendly adults we placed in homes. And again, that's not something you can always do, but we were able to at that time. And when I say zealous caretaking, we were really totally overboard. We're feeding them twice a day and only the best food. And in fact, one business that let us into the back so we could take care of them there in their backyard, they eventually kicked us out because we were such pains in the butt. And we ended up going through that empty lot I told you about. And that's where we ended up taking care of them. And along the way, we documented and kept track of everything. Data, like each cat, their outcome and when they were treated. Took photos of everybody. We were very careful to document what we were doing. And that certainly ended up paying off in the long run. So the results were that at the end of a year or so, the number of cats had dropped from about 30 to 12. That was largely through adoption and some attrition. Like some of the kitties were too sick or elderly and they didn't make it past a year. The results were not only a lot fewer cats, but far fewer nuisance complaints. So you can imagine if you lived in an apartment building and outside your courtyard there were 30 unfixed cats, a lot of noise in the middle of the night, a lot of fighting, a lot of kittens all over the place, and so lots of complaints. So once the colony was TNR'd, that really took care of all that. As I mentioned, there was one female cat who took us a while to catch, but at least it very much limited the reproductive cycle there. So pulling back and looking at this from a kind of a strategic point of view, which you now have the advantage of doing, it's about doing the best you can with what you have. So let's say we have 5 surgeries, like we have a limited number of them, and we're dealing with 5 different colonies of cats that have come to our attention. So the question becomes, how are you going to allocate those surgeries to have the most impact? This is really part of a theme you'll hear in building a TNR movement is there's always more need than you have resources to address. So you have to be very strategic about how you allocate your resources. And in this situation, this is what a lot of groups do. They try to divide what they have evenly across the caretakers they're working with, across the colonies they're working with. And the idea is you're sort of being fair. And the problem is, in each individual colony, you're only achieving a 20% sterilization rate. And that's not enough to get a situation under control. The other 4 cats, if they remain intact, are going to continue to reproduce more than enough to outpace any attrition or adoption and potentially. And also, the nuisance factor is not going to significantly go down. So you'll have fixed 5 cats, and it's great for those 5 cats. But from a movement point of view, you don't have a lot to show for it. Now, if you take those same 5 surgeries, and instead of spreading them out evenly, you focus them on one colony, well, now in that one colony, you've got 100% sterilization rate. You've eliminated reproduction within those cats, and you have little to no nuisance behavior. And all of a sudden, boom, you do have something to show. You can point to this colony and you can say, hey, this is the positive impact of TNR. this is what we can achieve if we do this in more places. And this will help you to raise funds. It will help build support by demonstrating the positive impact of your work. And again, if you go back to your documenting everything, and in fact, we got our first grant from that very first colony because we had done them. Again, looking back at it, it was not intentional. I don't want to take credit for having tremendous foresight. It was more like, well, that's where we lived. We all had jobs. That's most time we had. And we kind of stumbled into doing it the right way. But of course, you guys could do it more purposefully. And so after that initial colony, the word spread through the community very quickly about what we had done. And really no effort on our part, but I guess it's superintendents talking to other superintendents or doorman to doorman or whatever it might be. All of a sudden, we started getting lots of requests from nearby blocks who had their own colonies of cats to do the same thing. So we ended up working in a very methodical manner. Again, not intentionally, just happened to evolve that way. And we didn't run around all over the place. We sort of went to, so the first colony was on 97th Street. So the next colony we TNR'd was on 98th Street. And we continued to kind of move through the neighborhood in this manner. One of the things we did that I look back at and realized was another piece of good fortune in our methodology was we did what I call maximizing caretaker participation. So we were three volunteers. Like I said, we all had full-time jobs and limited funds, but a lot of people asking for help. So we required the people we were helping to substantially participate in what we were doing. Didn't mean they had to do everything. We were happy to trap and do a lot of the legwork, but they had to provide a holding space for the cats. They had to assist with a transport if they could, with funding, with feeding on a regular basis schedule so it was easier to trap. Whatever we could, whatever was the most somebody could offer, whether it was a lot or a little, we took advantage of that. So we were not putting ourselves out as a all-service nonprofit where you just tell us about the cats and we'll come over and take care of everything for you. You had to participate. And we would fill in the gaps for what people couldn't afford or couldn't physically do. And that worked quite well because it ended up wherever we did TNR, we left people behind who understood the process. And when it came down to that new cat who showed up, things like that, they knew how to handle it. And we ended up incorporating after a year or so because we saw the need to be able to fundraise. And we did start basic fundraising and getting small grants and that sort of thing. So what happened next, after we'd been doing this for about a year and a half or so, was it caught the interest of the general community and animal welfare community in New York City in general. And there was a big presentation put on by the local city bar association that had an animal law committee. And we had experts come in actually from around the country, as well as a representative from our group, Neighborhood Cats. And we invited everybody in the animal welfare community. There were 200 or 300 people that showed up for this presentation. And it was really the first time that trap, neuter, return had been introduced to the community on a large scale. And there were an opportunity for questions and presentations. And it was really a seminal event because after this, the major organizations in the community, like the ASPCA and the Humane Society of New York, they started getting behind TNR and spay neuter. And I thought it would be fun for you guys. I'm just going to show part of a video that was prepared for this presentation and was actually shown to the audience there and helped to teach them about what we were doing and motivate them to assist us. So here we go.
So the way that I started working with feral cats was I walked by a vacant lot near where I live and I saw a kitten playing. And I thought, okay, no problem. I can take care of one kitten. And I looked a little further and I saw three. I started to feel a little queasy. And then I saw five and I thought, I'm screwed. What am I going to do? So I called everybody up and nobody would help because everybody's overwhelmed. There were 30 cats, most of them less than 6 months old. I met a couple of neighbors and we decided to try to do something ourselves. And we heard about the trap neuter return program and we put that into effect and trapped the cats, neutered them, released them and provided for them afterwards. And it has been quite successful. So we decided, well, maybe this will work citywide. If we had not come along and we had not done anything, then probably most of those cats would be dead by now. There were people in the neighborhood were already starting to complain and had called the city to come and take care of the situation. And that's probably what would have happened is they would have been trapped. Nothing would have been done with them except for them to be euthanized.
So, okay, there he goes. He's inside. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
There's a real crisis going on right now. There are tens, possibly hundreds of thousands of cats living on the streets in New York City, very few of them neutered. And they're going to be even more a year from now, and there will be 10 times more 2 years from now, unless something is done very quickly. At this time, Neighborhood Cats, we're the only organization in New York City devoted to implementing a managed colony approach, a colony where the cats are, first of all, neutered, and then are provided with regular food and shelter. We've set up colonies in parking lots and back alleys and in side streets and in places you wouldn't think that a colony could do well, but they have done well. They have trailers that they can sleep under and abandoned cars, and people come by and feed them regularly. And now that they're neutered, there's less competition for the resources that are there. The most important thing to keep in mind is that you're not trying to make the situation perfect. You're just trying to improve it. You're not going to be able to save every cat. You're not going to be able to solve every problem and eliminate every risk, but you will make the situation better. Behind all this junk, there's a hole in the wall, and that's where Cat and the kittens were living when I found them. A cat doesn't know the difference between a nice suburban lawn and a concrete backyard, but these cats were born here. This is what they know, and this is their territory. My heart goes out to people who want to take all these cats off the streets and who actually do spend the time to work one cat at a time, no matter how wild they may be. The problem is there may be a million of them, and this is a slow and difficult process to socialize a feral cat. So it's not a practical solution on a global scale. I've never found releasing a cat easy. I always find it a painful moment. I always feel like I'm not giving this cat as much as I could. I just wouldn't get very far along if I went by those dealings. I've already gotten a partner full of cats. And I would just have to stop working because I would have nowhere to place them. And then they would just continue reproducing. And so you have to overcome that and look at the bigger picture. And then hopefully one day we won't have to release cats.
So after this presentation, as I said, there was a real sea change in terms of resources. And the ASPCA, which we were fortunate to have headquarters in New York City, they started providing free spay neuter for community cats, we were calling feral cats at the time, on their mobile clinics, which was a fabulous thing that this giant van would pull up with a clinic inside. We'd have the cats in a holding space, bring them on the van, get them fixed, and then the van would move on to the next spot. Also, the Humane Society of New York started offering regular clinics at their facility in Manhattan for a free spay neuter. So this sudden onrush of resources, especially on the veterinary side, allowed us to start what we called mass trapping. And that's when you TNR an entire colony at one time. So if somebody had five cats in their colony, or we sometimes, like where this truck was parked in the Rockaways, we had 40 cats, 40 in a colony, they could all get fixed at the same time. So this created naturally a growing demand for other TNR-related services like trappers and equipment. Training became a big thing. As we moved along, we continued working in our own territory on the Upper West Side. One of the things we did was we TNR'd all the cats in Riverside Park, which is a park that stretches for a few miles along the Hudson River. And there were 65 cats altogether, spread out among four colonies. We developed a very strong network of caretakers from the feeders who every day would go and take care of these guys. And we got 100% sterilization rate. We worked with the New York City Parks Department, and it was a very successful project. In fact, as of today, at last report, and this kitty may not be there anymore. I'm not sure. But the last report, there was one cat left from those original 65. So we had actually ended up having all the cats live out their lives and then not be replaced in this park. So what we ended up doing by focusing most of our efforts on the Upper West Side was we created what I call a model neighborhood. So remember, we had that model colony, but we ended up with the Upper West Side being an area where we had pretty much TNR'd every colony that came to our attention. And you can see those represented by the pins on this map. And we were, our area that we were calling the Upper West Side extended from about 60th Street up to 110th Street. And when we went to animal control, we started talking to them about TNR. The first thing they did was they looked at their intake data for the three zip codes where we had focused our efforts. And they saw that the stray cat intake had dropped by almost 3/4. Not surprisingly, right? Meanwhile, in the rest of the city, stray cat intake had actually been going up just a little bit. So they were immediately sold on this being an effective technique. And again, it's not like we sat down and said strategically, well, we should really do most of our work, if not close to all of it, on the Upper West Side of Manhattan, because that way we'll create an example, a model neighborhood, we'll be able to show the impact of TNR on a broad basis. It was much more, it just evolved that way because that's where we all lived. And again, the idea at that time of going to far reaches of Brooklyn to trap cats was just not on the radar. But through this exercise and the results that came from this, we kind of developed the concept of what we now call targeting. And let me explain targeting. So what we were talking about before, where you have five surgeries and five colonies, but you focus them all on one colony. That's what we call colony level targeting, where you're trying to get all the cats in that one particular group spayed and neutered. And if you do colony level targeting on a community-wide basis, this is what it looks like graphically, right? And the red circles are colonies of cats that are close to 100% sterilization level. And you can see how they're scattered throughout the community, right? And that will get you, that's good, but it will only get you so far, right? And what we discovered through our Upper West Side experience was that if you concentrate not just on the colony level, but on the community level, all the colonies are in one place, in one section of the community. And what that ends up doing is it eliminates one of the largest sources of reversal of progress, which is immigration. So when you TNR in cats in a colony and their numbers start to go down over time, there's always that risk that, well, the food source may not go down because it could be that whoever's there will put out enough food for whatever cats show up, or the shelter that's available can tolerate X number of cats. So if you've got cats in other colonies that are exceeding the capacity of available food and shelter, they're going to go looking for new places. And if your TNR colonies are going down in size and food is becoming available, those cats from other colonies are going to move in. And you also have abandoned cats who are looking for new food sources. And this is what we call immigration. And if your colonies, if your TNR colonies are spread throughout a community, you're most at risk of immigration. But if your TNR colonies are grouped into one section, then immigration can only take place at the borders. But within the territory, there's no new feral cats to go immigrate to TNR colonies. And you end up with what we had on the Upper West Side of Manhattan, which is entire kind of no kitten zone. And that will lead to more rapidly declining populations, lower intake, and that sort of a thing. It doesn't mean that you only do targeted. You may, for other reasons, want to still assist people in other colonies in other parts of the town, but you should always have a targeted element in your program. And be using that powerful tool to create model situations to be able to demonstrate, like, hey, if we had more resources that we could work in this intensive way in more parts of the community, we would solve the problem faster and avoid just first come, first served and just going randomly throughout your community. So you may do some random stuff, but some significant part of your surgery should be allocated to this type of an approach. So even in New York City now, where we're struggling with what's been a tremendous reduction in spay neuter capacity, neighborhood cats, we still have a targeted community. There's a community on Staten Island where we have a dedicated trapper. And for 2 years, she's just been trapping in this one kind of a town. And we're probably getting pretty close to, oh, I'd say at least 90% sterilization rate there. And so when you do that, you make a long-term impact. Even 25 years later now, on the Upper West Side of Manhattan, you do not see cats like we did back then. Because you're not only just fixing the cats, you're changing the culture.
Kittens may be small, but caring for them takes big knowledge. And the Online Kitten Conference is here to help. Join us on June 7th and 8th for 2 full days of expert-led sessions focused entirely on kitten care, fostering, and program management. From bottle feeding to behavior, this conference covers it all. It's a fully virtual event, so you can tune in from anywhere. And registration includes access to the recordings, slides, and handouts. You'll hear from experienced professionals, get access to valuable resources, and connect with a community that shares your passion for saving lives. Learn more and register at communitycatspodcast.com/kittens, because the tiniest lives deserve the best care.
Are you getting your message across to your entire community? Do they know what programs you offer and what they can do to help? Learn more about how to effectively market your organization or just sharpen your skills with a free self-paced marketing course, The Fundamentals of Marketing on Maddie's University. The course is designed to provide a basic understanding of marketing and provide you with templates and tools to elevate and improve your organization's brand, voice, and audience, and have fun while doing it. You'll receive a strategic marketing plan template to download free. Go to university.maddiesfund.org and search marketing to enroll now. Tomahawk Live Trap exceeds customers' expectations by providing them with the highest quality humane animal control products available. Check out their new Pro Series Gravity Door Trap. They feature a door that sets automatically when you open it. No hook or plate setting needed. Use discount code KEEPITHUMANE for 10% off your order at livetrap.com.
Once the city was impressed with the impact we had on their intake, they wanted to work with us. And one of the things we did was, in the very beginning, is we did a pilot project with them. And together we selected sites throughout the city. They didn't want to target it in this way. They wanted to try various sites with various conditions. And the one thing we insisted on is that the shelter be hands-on involved, that we wanted them to experience trap, neuter, return directly. And what they ended up doing was we did the trapping, but they did the transport. And they also held the cats overnight after the surgery and for a day or two while we were doing the trapping. So they got the experience of what it was like to be caring for the cats in the course of a TNR project. And that was a very good experience that further encouraged their participation and support for what we did. And having the official city shelter behind wherever you are, that's a big difference. That can be a huge help in advancing your cause. So pilot projects in general are a really good, what I would call low risk starting point. And it's low risk for the agencies that you're trying to get support for, because they're not committing, they're not changing their ordinances, they're not devoting huge amounts of resources. They're just trying it out in one selected spot and seeing how it goes. And when you have an agency or an organization that's cautious and kind of like interested, but not fully convinced, and not ready to go in hook, line, and sinker, then this is a good way to approach them and suggest that you do this. Now, what you want to do is you want to select the sites carefully. So when we mutually selected sites with Animal Care and Control in New York City, we presented them with a list to choose from. So in that way, we made sure that these were sites that were very doable. And remember, in a pilot, like what I've seen groups do in the beginning is they get an opportunity to get some money, they can do a pilot, and they want to go to the hardest part of town. They want to go trap the 35 black cats who live in the woods behind the railroad station, where you can only go at 3 a.m. and you're not sure how many cats are there. There's feeders all over the place. That's not the kind of situation you want. You want to build up to that, but that's not your pilot project. Your pilot project is a block where your good friends who have trapping experience live, and there are 15 cats who come on a regular basis to their backyard, and probably half of them you could just pick up and put in a carrier, although you shouldn't do that. That's the pilot, because the agency that you're working with that's new to this, they don't know the difference. They don't know hard from easy. That's something as somebody who's an expert. And if the really difficult situation fails, they're not going to say, well, that's understandable because it was really difficult. They're just going to say, but TNR doesn't work. On the other hand, you may pick a situation that you think is easy and it's successful, and your partners aren't going to go, oh, well, that doesn't mean anything because it was really easy. Let's see if it, you know, right? They're just going to say, oh, it worked. So be very careful about where you do your pilots. Make sure you have strong caretakers and make sure you have adequate resources available to ensure that as best you can that this is going to be successful. So roles for animal control, besides the direct hands-on stuff, is there's a lot that they can do. And when I say animal control, I mean also the official, the municipal shelter or the shelter of, that's responsible for taking in cats or whoever is in an official role who can be supportive of you. So besides going out and doing TNR themselves, they can help support any official approval you need in the form of ordinances or changing policies or obtaining funding. They can refer complaints they get and inquiries about community cats to you. Ear tip cat alerts. So if they ever come into, an ear tip cat comes into their custody, they can give you a call. You can come and pick the cats up, bring them back from where they came. They can help you with collecting and sharing data with you about the impact of your work, like intake statistics. You could do joint TNR projects like you see in this slide where we worked with animal control on a park that had been a real source of complaints for them. So we went out there and just TNR'd all the cats. And going further along, you can eventually perhaps even have a return to field program where community cats are, when it's appropriate, return them to their territory. So as we were growing, the request for assistance and the demand, the desire for help really started to come from all over New York City. And it became apparent that this small nonprofit, Neighborhood Cats, with our, by now we had more than 3 volunteers, but still, and I think we have 1 part-time paid position at this point, but still it was the demand in a city of 8 million people far outstripped our ability to personally meet it. So we thought the best way to continue to grow the grassroots movement was to train other people how to do it. And this is definitely something that's unique to working in a large metropolitan area where you have a huge pool of people and a lot of people who are interested in doing this work. This is not a model that would necessarily work in a small, a lesser populated rural area, but certainly for New York City and any large urban area, this is one way to do it. So we started, the ASPCA hosted workshops for us at their headquarters. That's why it looks like such a fancy boardroom. And what workshops allowed us to do was to teach best practices. So there was a big controversy at the time about, do you test the cats for feline leukemia or FIV? And we just taught everybody, no, you don't, right? Unless they're sick and the veterinarian needs the information. And it didn't become a controversy in New York City because we taught everybody you don't do it. So that just became the standard of practice. You also can teach people how to access local services themselves so that not everything has to go through you. So how do you get traps from the trap bank? How do you schedule spay-neuter appointments with the providers, things like that? It also created the concept of certification, which is, really helps a lot when people have basic training. And we found that clinics were being used more efficiently. So if they had 20 spots that somebody reserved without training, often people would come in with, would rain the day before, and they'd only left one day, and they'd come in with 8 cats, and 12 spots would be wasted. So when people came out trained, the average use of capacity more than doubled, I believe, and the system became much more efficient. So we created a requirement, as did all the other service providers in New York City, that in order to get that free spay neuter, in order to borrow those traps, in order to get other assistance, you had to be certified. And that, again, was the entry point. And as of today, we've trained over 11,000 New York City residents. So as you can imagine, that goes a long way towards that grassroots movement. So now you can do your own workshops, of course, but we do them online, as we just started during the pandemic, and it took on so well, we kept it going. So usually every month we have a certification workshop in partnership with the Community Cats podcast. The next one coming up is March 1st. I mention it today because, number one, you may be interested in attending it yourself, but also if you're interested in having this kind of basic training, you're welcome to tag on to what we're already doing. And just contact Kristen or Stacy at the Community Cats podcast if you want to, for example, be able to have us distribute handouts with your local resources or add a little video about what you're doing or things like that. We're happy to work in partnership with groups across the country. Another way that we continued to spread the word about Trap, Neuter, Return and build our movement was by, whenever possible, and this is when we kind of graduated past the Upper West Side, we're working throughout the city, we focused on what we called high-profile projects. So we did 300 cats on Rikers Island, which was the largest jail in the city, and we did Fresh Kills Landfill, which had been the city dump until it closed, but left a whole bunch of cats behind, and the police firing range. We worked with the coroner's office. We worked throughout the New York City park system. We TNR'd at a hospital. We worked on the campus, one of the city university campuses. And the idea behind this is, number one, we always love working with government agencies because that is a big part of getting TNR accepted on a permanent basis, is to have the government experience it and the success of it and want to do it at other locations. So we prioritize whenever we had an opportunity to work with a government agency, that went to the top of our list. And again, this goes back to, we didn't work first come, first serve. We chose our own priorities because there was only so many cats we could help. And we realized if we do it strategically, we can have an impact beyond that colony of cats. Any agency that really manages land probably has cats on them. So we're talking parks, sanitation, transportation, et cetera, corrections. So keep an eye out for that and seek out those opportunities to work with the government because it does build support and acceptance on the government level. Also, high profile could be what we call media magnets. And these are the kind of settings where the press, it makes a good story. So what we found at the top of the list, funny enough, were jails and prisons. The media loved the juxtaposition of the people were the ones in the cages and the cats were the ones running free. And they played endlessly off of that theme, but it just sort of seems to fascinate the media when you do TNR in a situation that involves incarceration. So on Rikers Island, we got national press for that, actually. That was all over the country. And of course, every time you get press, you're getting publicity and you're spreading the word. Sports stadiums, tourist attractions also tend to be of high interest to media. And when you're working at these places, let the media know. Write up a press release and send it out to your local papers and online journalists and TV stations. So a few things to pull from this, what we've been talking about so far, just general lessons, is that success breeds success. That's why being strategic is so important. Because in the end, probably everybody here today can talk about the theory of trap, neuter, return and why it's the best way to go. And it's very important to be able to do that. But out in the rest of the world, it's real life success, examples of success. They're far more persuasive than the theory. So if you have that model colony, you have that model neighborhood, you have that high profile project that was where there's far fewer complaints and you could document success, that's going to persuade people to engage with TNR a lot more than the theory of it will. Also, people are facing similar issues and they can see you have a solution. That's what happened with us on that very first colony. When we got that under control, of course, the buildings across the street, they wanted the same benefits. Success attracts donors and grantors, and it just provides that foundation for expanding into the wider community. We really want to emphasize that along the path, and this goes on, we still do this 25 years later, wherever we're working, whether it's New York City or Maui or Indonesia, we document everything. To the extent you can, you want to track the before and after numbers in colony size. So you're going to know, if you're going for 100% of the cats, you're going to know how many cats were there at the beginning, right? Just by virtue of who you're TNRing. And then go back to the caretakers, do some census every once a year or something like that, and keep track of those numbers. And again, it doesn't show that TNR is working everywhere in the community because what you're tracking is not necessarily a random sample, but it does show that where you're working, it is succeeding. There's a system we've created called CatStats. It's catstats.org. And that's an online database for tracking colonies. So if you're interested in that, go check out catstats.org. Keep track of the outcomes of the cats you're working with, especially in the beginning. Were they returned? Were they adopted? Track impact. So that's also the before after colony numbers, but also shelter intake, dead on arrivals. What we see over time with successful TNR programs is that the DOAs for cats go down as there's less of them wandering around. There's less of them, unfortunately, getting hit by cars and things like that. If you're a rescue group, you don't have any access to shelter data, maybe there isn't a shelter in your area, then track what comes into your organization. How many requests for assistance are you getting? How many cat-related calls? How many complaints? If you can get access to your local health department's data, how many rabies exposures are being treated every year? So people who get bit by stray cats who have no known ownership, and if they're in an area where rabies is in the environment, they're going to end up potentially being treated for rabies exposures. Sometimes people are exposed to cats who then later turn out to have had rabies, and so those people all have to be treated prophylactically. Big issue with health departments, and not because a lot of people die from rabies, but every time somebody's treated prophylactically so that rabies doesn't happen, it's $2,000 or $3,000 hit to the local shelter, to the local health department. So if you can show rabies exposures going down in an area where you're doing TNR, that's going to be a big reason why people are going to want to support your work. And again, I said this over and over, but photos, videos we have from our early days, we're able to tell a story, and you'll be able to do the same if you've got photos and videos.
That's it for this week. Please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave a review. We love to hear what you think, and a 5-star review really helps others find the show. You can also join the conversation with listeners, cat caretakers, and me on Facebook and Instagram. And don't forget to hit follow or subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, YouTube, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss a single show. Thanks for listening, and thank you for everything that you do to help create a safe and healthy world for cats.